Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. After saying this, Bhagirata satisfied Lord Shiva by performing austerities. O King Parikshit, Lord Shiva was very quickly satisfied with Bhagirata. Purport. The words ashvatutaschita indicate that Lord Shiva was satisfied very soon. Therefore, another name for Lord Shiva is Ashutosha. Materialistic persons become attached to Lord Shiva because Lord Shiva bestows benedictions upon anyone and everyone very quickly, not caring to know how his devotees prosper or suffer. Although materialistic persons know that materialistic happiness is nothing but another side of suffering, they want it. And to get it very quickly, they worship Lord Shiva. We find that materialists are generally devotees of many demigods, especially Lord Shiva and Mother Durga. They do not actually want spiritual happiness, for it is almost unknown to them. But if one is serious about being happy spiritually, he must take shelter of Lord Vishnu. As the Lord personally demands, Sarva Dharman Prichaja, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshishyami Masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Bhagavad Gita 18:66. Ityuktva sa nirpo devam tapasot sayachchivam kalen nalpi yasa rajam tasye shaschad atuschita. After saying this, Bhagirata satisfied Lord Shiva by performing austerities. O King Parikshit, Lord Shiva was very quickly satisfied with Bhagirata. So, of course, here Bhagirata was not really looking for material happiness. Bhagirata was trying to save the world from the force of Mother Ganga, and he was interested in bringing Mother Ganga in order to save his ancestors and bring auspiciousness to everyone. So this particular principle doesn't really apply to Bhagirata. But the principle is a generally solid one, that if you want something very quickly, then there's one method, and if you want the real, authentic thing, then there's another method. So, what to want and where to get it? I think this is the big question in life, huh? What should I want, and how should I go about getting it? How do I define success? What will bring me happiness? Prabhupada speaking a lot here in this purport about happiness. How to get happiness. Right, there's that. John Lennon talks about how when he was a little child, the teacher asked all the children in school, please write what you want to be when you grow up. So John Lennon wrote, I want to be happy. Right, and when the teacher collected the papers, she said, you didn't understand the assignment. And John Lennon said, no, you didn't understand life. So, and when Prabhupada was asked in South America, what is the purpose of life? What was his answer? To enjoy. He said, Ananda. He said, the purpose of life is to be happy. Ananda Maya Biashat. We are all happiness-seeking creatures. The scientists even know that. They call it the pleasure principle. Even if you take an entity in a very low form of life, they will try to achieve happiness. And they will try to avoid distress. So I compare this to the heat-seeking missiles. Right? So in the wartime, they have these weapons that seek out heat, so they'll find the engine of the airplane or the engine of the tank, and they'll go right for the heat. So we're pleasure-seeking beings. We're always looking, where is happiness? Where is happiness? Where is happiness? And this starts immediately, right? Immediately. As soon as we're born, we're looking, where is happiness? Where is happiness? Of course, when you're born, happiness is very simple. Happiness is, you know, a dry nappy and your mommy's holding you and you have some milk in your tummy, and that's kind of happiness. But this principle that we're looking for happiness is there. And these are the questions in life. How do I find it? Where do I go? What's the way to achieve it? So here Srila Prabhupada's contrasting materialistic happiness and spiritual happiness, right? Materialistic happiness and spiritual happiness. And how do you get material happiness and how do you get spiritual happiness? So he gives something very simple here. He says that material happiness is nothing but another side of suffering. Material happiness is nothing but another side of suffering. And he also says that spiritual happiness is almost unknown to the materialist. So for most people in this world, all they know is material happiness. They don't even know that there is a material happiness and a spiritual happiness. They don't even understand that that's an option. They don't even see it as a choice. It's like something written on their menu with invisible ink, you know, and they can't even see that it's there. I'm sure you all know that we have certain inborn biases. Yes, you're aware of that? And that it's not that what we perceive creates our beliefs, but what we believe creates what we see. Do you all know that? Are you aware of that? So that's one of the things they teach you in psychology. So there was a very famous experiment done in, I think, the 1940s with playing cards. So with playing cards, you know, there's four suits. There's the red hearts, there's the red diamonds, there's the black clubs, and there's the black spades. Everybody knows that from cards? Maybe some of you have never seen cards, but have some idea what they look like. So they had these volunteers, and they were showing them cards very quickly and asking them to name the suit. So they're saying, you know, okay, that's a heart, that's a spade, that's a club, etc. Now, unbeknownst to the volunteers, they put some weird cards in there. They put some red spades and some black hearts. But people didn't identify those because they weren't expecting to see them. So when they'd see the red spade, they'd either say it was a heart or a spade. They wouldn't say, oh, there's something funny there. And then they gradually slowed down the time they were showing the cards. And at a certain point, each of 75% of the participants in the study said, what was that? And then at a certain point, they said, wait a minute, that's a black heart. But for many people, it had to go very, very slowly before they even said, hey, what was that? And 25% of the participants never said, what was that, no matter how slowly it went. So we see what we expect to see. We already have our set of beliefs, we already have our ideas about what is reality, and we perceive things according to that reality. So someone in material consciousness doesn't even perceive that there is such a thing as spiritual happiness. They don't even know that it's an option. So someone in material consciousness, all they see is varieties of happiness according to the modes of nature. And even then, if somebody's really in the mode of ignorance, they don't even perceive happiness and passion or happiness and goodness. Because someone in ignorance, Krishna explains, they don't know what to do and what not to do. They don't know what's binding, what's liberating. They're always striving in the wrong direction. So someone in the mode of ignorance doesn't even perceive happiness and passion as happiness. They don't even see it. What to speak of happiness and goodness? That appears, it just doesn't make any sense to them at all. And spiritual happiness is invisible. Yeah. So let's look at these different kinds of happiness. So happiness in the mode of ignorance is actually not happiness at all. So I was just reading in the third canto, Prabhupada said, in the mode of ignorance, there's neither enjoyment nor knowledge. There's actually no enjoyment. It's kind of like the animals. So to what extent are the animals really enjoying? You know, you're out in the cold, you're out in the rain, and you're just kind of looking among the grass for some little worm. You know, is that really happiness? I remember when I was, I think, a teenager, and I was reading about the uprising of the black slaves in America, and one of the main people who was leading this uprising was put into jail. And in jail, they had just a bucket for their toilet, and so in the bucket was all, you know, and there were flies there also. And he looked at the flies, and he said, the flies don't realize that they're suffering. They think, oh, I'm very happy in this toilet bucket. But actually, they're suffering. From an objective position, they're suffering. And he said, many people in slavery, they don't even understand they're suffering because that's all that they know. But that doesn't mean they're not suffering. Because he was trying to decide, should I work to free people, even if those people weren't asking to be freed, even if those people said, you know, our life is all right. So happiness in the mode of ignorance is very much like that. It's like the happiness of the fly in the filthy place. You know, the happiness of intoxication, which is the happiness of poisoning your body. It's like the happiness of being sick. You know, so when a person's sick, You can't think clearly. If you have a high fever, you may be hallucinating and having delusions, right? You can't function properly. You can't digest properly. You can't walk properly. So people take these intoxicants to imitate being sick. Strange, huh? So is that happiness? Is that actually happiness? Or happiness in the mode of ignorance is you cheat people, you insult people. I'd be very expert in insulting people. That's one of the happinesses in the mode of ignorance. Ah, I insulted them, and I did it so expertly. You know, I was able to cheat them, just like thieves. When they see an elderly person, you know, going with a walker, they think, ah, good target. Here's somebody I can exploit. Here's somebody I can steal from. So is that happiness? Does one get any happiness from taking from others and exploiting others and cheating others? I mean, I'm sure all of us, at least me, I don't know, probably none of you, but I'm sure all of us in our life have sometimes found some happiness from insulting somebody else. What does that feel like? You remember what it feels like? Does it feel like happiness? It feels like kind of in the heart. Now, if that's all you know, you'll think that that's happiness. Some kind of sense that I am powerful, right? Siddham, I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. But it's not anything you would call joy, is it? Is that anything you'd call joy? Yeah. Yes, I insulted that person. I got back at them, that foolish person. Is there any joy in that? Anything you'd really call happy? But if that's all you know, if you don't know anything else, if you're just in the mode of ignorance, you take that as happiness. There's not really any happiness in there at all. Now, the reason that there's not any happiness in there at all, and this is kind of subtle and implied here by Srila Prabhupada talking about the Sarva Dharman Parichaja verse. You know, first I thought, well, why is Prabhupada quoting that verse in this purport? Is because in the mode of ignorance, there's no surrender. There's no giving. There's no sacrifice. There's only taking. That's what crime is. Crime is taking, yes? If we want to define what is criminal, something criminal means that I take something from someone else without their permission. I use some sort of force. Right? I take your money when you don't want to give it to me by force. I take your life when you don't want to give it to me by force. You know, I take your house. I take sexual pleasure from you. I take something from you by force when you're not willing to give it. I'm not giving anything in exchange. Huh? I'm just taking. I'm only taking. And it's all about who? Me. It's all about me. And in ignorance, one sees that everyone else is simply an object for their enjoyment. One doesn't even really see separate living entities. It's almost an anamoya consciousness that, you know, everything is just when that king Sodas in the Bhagavatam was cursed to become a man-eater, it said that all of a sudden he looked around the world and he said, oh, food. Right? Before he had seen, oh, there's a person, there's this, and then all of a sudden, oh, food. Everything is for me. So happiness in the mode of ignorance, there's only taking. All I'm doing is taking. I'm not giving. The deeper you are into ignorance, the more there's this consciousness of I'm only taking and it's all about me. And there's no sacrifice. There's no surrender. There's not even a sacrifice or surrender on, a normal platform of paying your taxes to the government or taking care of a wife, taking care of a husband, you know, serving the boss. There's not even that level of surrender. We were recently, where were we? We were in Venice, and we took my grandson around to show him Venice. So as we're going through the city is like, if you've ever been in Venice, it's like a big outdoor mall. The whole city of Venice is just a big outdoor mall with some bridges, you know. And everyone has their little shops, but then there's also the street peddlers that they put their piece of cloth on the street, right, and they put their knockoff purses or watches, right? And the whole time that they're selling, what are they doing? Anyone know what they're doing constantly while they're selling on the street? They're looking over their shoulder constantly. You ever seen animals do this? It's a squirrel they're eating. You know, and they're always looking around. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine it at breakfast prasadam? Right? If our principle was take as much off the other person's plate as possible. You know, so you're sitting there with your plate and always, where are the other people going to take my prasadam away? And so because they weren't paying their taxes to the government, therefore they were constantly in a state of fear. Now, this is happiness in the mode of ignorance. You know, and they're thinking at the end of the day, oh, I've made so much money without paying taxes. But all day they're in a state of fear. Imagine what that does to their health even. Imagine what it does to be in anxiety constantly all day. Right? It would be a lesser price to pay your taxes to the government. So that's the mode of ignorance. You don't give even taxes. You don't even have an honest business. So no happiness. So then mode of passion, Prabhupada was saying in the third canto, mode of passion is not much knowledge, but material happiness. So material happiness is basically experienced in the mode of passion. And the mode of passion, of course, Rajagun, Raja means king. So we think not like some medieval European king, but the Vedic kings, where they were very righteous, you know, very honorable. So the idea of the mode of passion is, okay, I want happiness, but I'm going to do some kind of surrender. I'm going to do some kind of sacrifice to get it. So someone in the mode of passion is starting to approach this Mamekam Sharanam Raja. They're starting to have some Sharanam. They're surrendering to someone. They're surrendering to the government, who's a representative of God. Right? I was just reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita how when the Nawab Hussain Shah came to Sanatana Goswami and said, well, you look pretty healthy to me. How come you're not coming and doing your work? My physician said you're healthy. So it said there that Sanatana Goswami and all of the brahmanas, they all respected the Nawab. They showed him external respect. And Prabhupada was saying, why? You know, the Nawab was very violent, even by his own account. He said to Sanatana Goswami, you know, I'm not running the kingdom. I'm just going around killing living entities. So you have to run the kingdom for me. So although by his own account he wasn't a very nice person, why did they show him respect? And Srila Prabhupada says that if someone's in a position of authority like that, they have some grace of God. They've been empowered by God. So therefore they're shown some respect. So someone in the mode of passion, at least they're giving their taxes to the government, who is a representative of God. They're surrendering, they're taking their sex pleasure in marriage. So there's some surrender. I'm taking care of my wife. I'm taking care of my husband. I'm taking care of the children. They have a legitimate business. They're doing some kind of sacrifice which then earns them the right to get enjoyment. That's the way everything functions. If you want some pleasure, you have to sacrifice for it. Now, of course, if you're really in the mode of passion, you'll understand what is the proper sacrifice. So people nowadays, they don't really understand. Their passion is very mixed with ignorance. But if you're really in the mode of passion, you understand, okay, I want to enjoy intellectual pleasure, so I preach the truth for the benefit of the people. I want to enjoy the pleasure of taking care of people and being honored and respected, so I undergo the sacrifice of running a government and taking care of the people, providing them what they need. I want to enjoy the pleasure of great wealth. I undergo the sacrifice of taking care of the earth, taking care of the cows, earning honest wealth. I want to enjoy the pleasure of creating beauty, creating functionality and service for society. So I undergo the sacrifice of having all the beauty and function in society remind people of spirituality. You know, I want to, and then in the ashrams, I want the pleasure of freedom. So I undergo the sacrifice of simplicity and renunciation. I want the pleasure of sense gratification. I want the pleasure of sex and money and a home. I undergo the sacrifice of taking care of a family. So people in the higher modes of passion, they understand what is the requisite sacrifice that fits the pleasure I want to get. So today people again don't understand that. They think if I want to enjoy freedom, it means I just don't get married and I have my own job and I have my own house and I have a string of boyfriends or girlfriends and I don't take responsibility. So, you know, people don't really get what is the proper sacrifice. They think if I want to enjoy wealth, then I just simply exploit the land and I exploit the cows and I create false wealth that are just numbers on a computer. You know, they don't really get how to do sacrifice. But that is happiness in the mode of passion. And there is some happiness. There is some happiness because you're starting to understand this principle of sharanam, of sacrifice. You're starting to understand that happiness comes by giving, that happiness comes by getting me out of the center, that happiness comes by being part of a greater whole and serving the greater whole. And everyone experiences this, unless they're totally in the mode of ignorance, that I get more happiness by giving than by receiving. Right? Like yesterday we did a program at Soho, and afterwards we gave a birthday present to one of our good friends, and everybody was singing to her in the whole crowd. And I thought, you know, I'm so much happier giving her a gift than if I were to use that same gift for myself. You know, to give her some sweets from the deities here was much happier than if I just stayed in my own room like a little squirrel eating the sweets. You know, this principle of giving to others is greater happiness. This is understood in the mode of passion. And one isn't, now what is the happiness that one's enjoying in the mode of passion, of course? The happiness that one's enjoying, although it is happiness, is very meager. Because it's almost exclusively on the platform of the body and the mind. That's pretty much where it is. So you're enjoying, Bhaktivinoda Thakura talks about three levels of rasa, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And he calls physical rasa earth rasa, emotional rasa heavenly rasa, and spiritual Vaikuntha rasa. So in the mode of passion, you're mostly getting physical, and you may get some emotional. So in the mode of passion, you know, you're eating good food, and you have some nice sex life and some nice home, and you're getting the praise and honor of society, which is what's really important to those in the mode of passion. So in the mode of passion, their happiness is really, do you see how good I am? Do you notice how righteous I am? You know, is my name going to be in the history books? And are you watching me? So that's very much the happiness in the mode of passion. You know, I'm a big, important person. I'm such a charitable person. I'm such a giving person. I'm such a good person. Hey, 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 look at me, look at me, look at me. See what a wonderful spouse I have, what wonderful children I have, what a beautiful house I have, what a nice car I have, and see all the good that I'm doing for society. So this happiness, Srila Prabhupada calls, is as another side of suffering. Happiness in the mode of ignorance is simply suffering. It just isn't happiness at all. But happiness in the mode of passion is another side of suffering. So why is that? Because the sacrifice you perform in the mode of passion is miserable. This is why Krishna says this happiness is mixed happiness and distress. When you're doing your sacrifice, you don't really enjoy it. You don't really enjoy it. You don't really enjoy your commute to work. You don't really enjoy working. But you get to enjoy the money that you honestly earned. So your sacrifice, it's genuinely a sacrifice. But your happiness gets to be some genuine happiness. But you have to earn it by suffering. And then, of course, the result of your happiness in the mode of passion is also eventually suffering. Because what are you doing? You're serving a body that's full of what? Disease. And nastiness. And it becomes old. And it dies. And you start seeing that everyone else is also really interested in themselves. That even though in the mode of passion you're getting happiness by sacrificing for others, you're sacrificing for others with the goal of enjoying for yourself. You're still very me-centered. So you're thinking, you know, I'll please my wife and buy her a diamond bracelet so that she'll give me what I want. Have you ever seen, Lynn, any of the adverts for jewelry? It's very much like that. Do this and the person will give you what you want. Please your boss and they'll give you a raise. All right? Please the government and they'll give you some honor. It all becomes still, what is it about for me? So in happiness in the mode of passion, you start realizing that everyone else is like that too. That you thought your husband was trying to please you, but actually was trying to please himself. You thought your wife was trying to please you, but actually she's just trying to please herself. You thought the business you work for was trying to please you, but actually they're just trying to please themselves. And you start seeing that although people are giving to you, they're giving to you with a motive. Just like you're giving to them with a motive. And one starts to see the world as this sort of what we call dog-eat-dog. You know, the rat race. As Prabhupada says in the 20th chapter of Krishna book, you see the world as a very aggressive place. And so you become very unhappy. You know, you start off with this idea that, well, actually everybody loves me and everyone's trying to serve me and everyone's trying to make me happy. And so I'll also give them something and this way I'll be able to become happy. And you realize that that's not what's going on at all. That everybody is simply calculating, how can I get everything on sale? How can I do the least amount of sacrifice and get the most amount of pleasure? And everyone's trying to do that, and it's a constant competition. And so you become very disappointed. And also it's another side of suffering, because it's all temporary. Dukalayama Shashvatam. All the things one accumulates with great endeavor are simply taken away by others. So all this sacrifice, and at the end, what do you have? Nothing. At the end, you have nothing. Come into the world naked, leave the world naked. You have nothing. You've accumulated all this money. And when you leave, you can't take it with you. Right? And you've accumulated all these relationships and all this knowledge and all these things. You know, all my knowledge will make me happy. All my associates and my relationships, my house, my accolades. I think Prabhupada talked about how one astrologer had told him that the president of one European country, after dying, had become a dog. You know, so if you become a dog, what did all that do for you? Your statue's up in the park and you just go and urinate on your own statue. You know, what good does it do you? And therefore people become also just suffering. It's all temporary, and you don't even have to wait until death. How many of our things get taken away before death? You know, our favorite phone gets stolen, our favorite boots wear out, the person we think that who loves us leaves us for somebody else. Right? The persons who praise you then turn around and criticize you. I just received one of those thankfully occasional emails. Thankfully, I don't get them very much. But one devotee sent me this email. Please go to this website where I am thoroughly criticizing our GBC and revealing what a scoundrel he is. Wow. I thought this is the nature of the world. Right? One day people are praising you and the next day they're criticizing you. One day they're putting something up, see how wonderful this person is, see how wonderful they are, and then immediately, oh, everybody, look, it's all this person's faults, real or imagined. And so in the mode of passion, one becomes very unhappy. The fame can turn to infamy. Right? The pleasures turn to distress, and if you live long enough, the body's not able to enjoy anymore. Right? Like there was a time I didn't need any glasses. I could just see. I could just read and, you know, look anywhere, and it just worked. The eyes just worked, and I didn't even think about that they were working, you know. Now I have to get these glasses that try to imitate good vision, and then you have to, okay, I have to look here for here and here for here. Okay. I'm looking over there. It doesn't work so well anymore. And if all your happiness is on the platform of this body, then when you can't enjoy this body so well anymore, and my dear friends, that'll most likely happen if you live long enough. If you die early, then you lament that you're dying so young and you didn't get to enjoy life. And if you live long enough, then you just can't have those pleasures anymore. It just doesn't work. You know, you try to eat the rich food and then just simply you get a stomachache. And you can't digest it. So it's another side of suffering. It's all based on something external. And then happiness and ignorance and passion is also another side of suffering, because it doesn't touch the soul at all. It's all superficial. It's something like having a very clean car, you know, but you're dirty. Or if you, you know, if you're filthy dirty, you've been out working in the garden, you're all sweaty, you're all dirty, and without bathing, you put on clean clothes. So material happiness is all like that. It's just touching the body and the mind. It's not touching the self. is compared to happiness in a dream. Like you have a dream and you're eating very nice food in your dream. Right? I've given this example before that one day when I was fasting, I was very tired. I took a little rest. And in my dream, I dreamt that I was eating. And I was eating this whole, it was a nice feast I was eating in my dream. I remember I was eating pakoras. And I was doing a nirjal, so I was also drinking. I had a big jug, a big gallon jug of water in my dream, and I was pouring a cup of water and drinking it, and pouring another cup of water and drinking it, another cup of water and drinking it. And at one point in my dream, I thought, how come I'm still thirsty? And I took the whole jug in my dream and started trying to drink out of the whole jug. And in my dream, I started thinking, what's wrong? I still feel so hungry and thirsty. And then I woke up. And when I woke up, I thought, oh, it's dream water. So all happiness in the mode of ignorance and passion, it's all dream water. And that's why, and it's again another side of suffering. You get it, 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 and you're like, I'm still not satisfied. I'm just still not satisfied. You know, it was one of the biggest songs, right? I can't get no satisfaction. Who was singing that song? Somebody who was very rich and very famous, had his more women than he knew what to do with. And still he's saying, I can't be satisfied because it's dream water. You know, so you get the degree, you put it up on your wall, and you have the Jaguar and the BMW, maybe even have a Rolls Royce in your garage, you know, in this beautiful house that's rivaling Buckingham Palace, and a beautiful spouse and wonderful children and a dog and a big flat-screen TV and, you know, everything. Prestigious job and lots of money in the bank, and you say, is that all there is? And a lot of people who get all those things become alcoholics, drug addicts, commit suicide. Because they get all those things and it's just dream water. It's just dream food. Okay, that's happiness in the mode of passion. Then happiness in the mode of goodness is different. Happiness in the mode of goodness is much more on the subtle platform, and it's getting much closer to real happiness. Happiness in the mode of goodness is things like equanimity, forgiveness, tolerance, cleanliness. It's an internal state, right? In the mode of passion, ignorance, in both of those modes, you're really thinking about me and what can I get for me, either by stealing it or by paying for it. But in goodness, one is thinking, how can I be imbalanced? So you're more understanding this sharanam principle of surrender. Let me be in balance with the earth. Let me be in balance with my body. Let me be in harmony with the world. Let it not all be about me. Of course, even in the mode of goodness, it's still about let me be in balance. Let me be in harmony. Let me be forgiving. In the mode of ignorance, you're taking happiness by insulting others. In the mode of passion, you're taking happiness by forgiving so you can think, I am such a forgiving person. See? See? Hey, see how forgiving I am? And in the mode of goodness, you're thinking, I'm a forgiving person because I want to be in balance. I'm a forgiving person because it's the right thing to do. Whether anyone notices or not isn't important. It's the way I can be in balance. So you're really in this mood of surrender. You're really in this mood of giving, but still for yourself. So in the mode of goodness, one starts tasting something that is something close to spiritual happiness. It starts being on the verge. It's still superficial. It's still on the platform of the mind. It's not touching the soul. But it's starting to be close. And therefore, in the mode of goodness, you start to get real knowledge. You start to see, oh, this is what will make me happy, and this is what will make me unhappy. In ignorance, you just see a completely opposite. You look at real happiness, and you go, ugh, why would I want to be forgiving? Why would I want to be sacrificing? Why would I want to be austere? It doesn't look like happiness. In the mode of passion, you see, okay, if I'm forgiving and I'm austere, I'll get my sense gratification later to a better degree. You're using it as a means to an end. So in passion, sometimes you get what will bring you happiness and sometimes not. So in the mode of ignorance, you make all bad decisions. In the mode of passion, you make some good decisions. In the mode of goodness, you make all good decisions. You can see, this is what's good for me. This is some of the main questions devotees ask. What should I do? Should I do this thing or that thing? Should I get married or not? Should I live here or not? Should I do this service or not? Should I go to this place or not? Should I do this variety of service? How should I earn my money? What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And as soon as you're in sattva-gun, you don't have to ask those questions anymore. You just know. You just automatically know. Because in sattva-gun, you have knowledge. You know what is binding, what is liberating, what will bring me happiness, what will bring me distress, what is good, what is bad. And at least most of the time, because it's not pure sattva, you choose the right thing. So most of the time, you're happy. Although it seems to someone in passionate ignorance that someone in the mode of goodness is only sacrificing. That's what it looks like to them. It looks like such a person is only giving because the mood in goodness is just give, give, balance, balance, balance. A person in goodness understands that by giving, I become happy. And of course, ultimately in goodness, one thinks I'm going to merge with the Brahman. I'm going to become one. I'm going to see the oneness everywhere. Vijavanaya sampane brahmani gavihasini suni chaivasu pankitas pandita samadarshinaha. But even those in goodness may not understand what is spiritual happiness and may still be invisible to them. And we see this a lot of times in our preaching. We see that although people in sattva-gun are often very attracted to Krishna consciousness, right? You go to like some of these yoga groups, and these people, you know, they're vegans and they're practicing yoga and they're really into harmony and fearlessness and peace and equanimity and balance. Many times when you talk to those people about the God as a person and spiritual happiness, they can't understand what you're saying. They don't see it. It doesn't make any sense to them. It's invisible. And happiness in the mode of goodness also is temporary. And it leaves one just to burst, as Prabhupada says, as a philosopher or as a poet, or if you're really in the mode of goodness, to the demigod life. And it still isn't touching the real self. It's still dream food. It's still dream water. It's not really touching the soul. So those who are really intelligent, right? Those who are really intelligent, Udharadi, those who have real intelligence, they can go beyond the mode of goodness and see not only what is binding, what is liberating, what is good, what is bad, but they see there's another kind of happiness entirely that's of a completely different nature. Completely different nature. It's nothing like the happiness in ignorance, passion, and goodness. It's just totally, totally different. Well, one way it's totally different is it's not me-centered at all. It's not about pleasing me. It's about pleasing my source, Krishna. And it's not about pleasing Krishna so I can get something from Krishna. That's going to be in goodness or passion. But it's about pleasing Krishna just because I love him. Without thinking about what am I going to get back. And because I'm part of Krishna, when I please Krishna, I am naturally pleased. Therefore, we have this word, atush, to be pleased. Right? We have actually two here. We have tushed and we have atoshayat and astushyata, how Lord Shiva is very easily pleased. So this spiritual happiness comes from pleasing Krishna, which also pleases the self. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Atma Tushta, one is satisfied in oneself. And he talks about Atma Rama. We've all heard this word, Atma Rama. What does that mean? Yourself is happy in yourself. And the irony of spiritual happiness is when you forget about your own happiness completely, you get your own happiness completely. And as we can see in the modes, the more you're thinking about your happiness, the less you get. To the point that when all you think about is your own happiness, and you don't care one fig about anyone else's happiness, you get no happiness at all. Therefore, Jesus says those who seek to find their life will lose it, and those who try to find their life for my, those who lose their life for my sake will find it. It's opposite to what we think, which is why it's invisible to the materialists. And they don't even try for it. It doesn't seem to them like it exists. You know, Prahlad Maharaj said, we're all naturally happy, but as soon as you look for happiness, your suffering begins. But to a materialistic person, it's not even on the radar. Well, if I want to become happy, don't I have to try to become happy? What do you mean I'm going to try to become happy by giving up the search for happiness? That doesn't make any sense. It's crazy. They think it's madness. Right? What's day for one is night for the other. They look at us and they say, you know, you must be brainwashed by some sort of evil cult leader who wants to take everything from you, because why else would you voluntarily give up your own happiness to serve the deities? How could you, an intelligent, educated person, say, instead of keeping, you know, buying flowers for my room, I'm going to buy flowers for Radha Gokulananda? Why would you want to do that? Why would you give up some cushy office job to go out on the cold London streets and sell books to people who most of them just walk past you? Why would you do that? They can't fathom it. But real spiritual happiness is love. And we see even going up through the Mohs, one gets more happiness when one sacrifices. The more one gives, the happier one becomes. And the ultimate happiness comes from the ultimate giving. And the ultimate giving is only done in love. There's no ultimate giving done in anything else but love. Because this ultimate living giving is voluntary. It's not a forced thing. It's not, you know, it's give. It's I give myself, Atmanivedanam, out of love. And when I give everything to Krishna, I find because he's my source, and because he's also giving everything to me, that I have much more than what I've given. You know, Sudama Brahmana gave a little few grains of low-class rice and got a palace. The fruit seller gave a handful of fruit and got a basket full of jewels. So one finds spiritually that when I give everything to Krishna, Krishna also gives everything to me, because not only is it that I'm loving Krishna, Krishna is loving me. This, therefore, Krishna is saying, Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha. Don't worry. Don't worry. If you give everything to me, I'm going to give you freedom from all the things that are causing you suffering. I'm going to give you freedom from all the difficulty. Masucha, don't have any fear. You're not getting something temporary. You're getting something that's eternal. So if we can even understand theoretically that this is happiness, then the place to get it is, of course, our source, Krishna. We're not going to get this happiness from somebody else. Now, those who want material happiness, they often don't even go to Krishna. Like here, they go to Lord Shiva, because they'll figure, Lord Shiva, he'll give me what I want very quickly. What is this very quickly? Very quickly means with the least amount of sacrifice possible. Right, because someone in the modes, they're thinking, I want to get on sale, right? I want to get something on sale. We all get very happy when we get something on sale. So mode of ignorance, you want to steal, right? In the mode of passion and goodness, you're paying, but you want to get it on sale. So someone looking for material happiness, they're always looking for the quickest, easiest way. How can I do the least amount of yajna and still get the happiness that I want? One of my guy brothers, who's an expert in deity worship, he says, generally, whenever people get deities and they ask him, how do I worship, they always say, what's the minimum standard? What's the minimum that I have to do? And devotees ask this kind of question all the time. You know, what's the trick? What's the secret? What's the little secret thing I can find out to instantly chant pure japa and instantly surrender? You know, give it to me fast. Give me something fast and easy, where I don't really have to do any kind of surrender, and I can just, you know, push the bliss button. Right? We were talking yesterday how instead of books now, I have an e-reader. And when I got this e-reader, when I first ordered a book online, you know, you already have all your information entered online, and all you have to do, you just click one button online. You just go on the internet, you click one button, or you can even do it on your device. And within 3 seconds, actually 3 seconds, the book's on your device. You know, it's so much fun, you want to buy another book just to see it pop up on your device right away. It's something like Prapti City, you know. Give me a mango. You know, okay, I want this book. Whoop! There it is in your hand. You know, it's like, wow, a mystic power through technology. So we're thinking that I want bhakti like that. You know, I want some just, aha, you know, show up in the hand. So therefore, people who want material happiness, they're looking, who can be satisfied very quickly? Who can I go to who will give me this materialist very quickly with the lowest payment? But the devotees don't think like that. Just like Mukunda, when Mahaprabhu was giving out benedictions. That'd be nice, huh? Suppose that we went, hey, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's fully manifesting himself on the altar for the next 21 hours. And he's willing to give anybody whatever they want. Hurry, 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 come in the temple room. You know, so everybody went to see Mahaprabhu. And they're asking for whatever they want. Of course, most of them, they're asking for prema. Please, can I have prema? Or please, can you give prema to my auntie or something like that? And then the devotee said, what about Mukunda? And Mahaprabhu said, I don't want to see Mukunda. He pretends to be a devotee, and then he hangs out with the Mayavadis. Yeah. So they went and told Mukunda, the Lord's not going to see you. And he asked, will he ever see me? And they told Mahaprabhu, you know, will you ever see him? And he said, yes, after 10 million births. And they went out and gave the answer, after 10 million births. So did Mukunda say, oh, I forget this. Let me just go to Lord Shiva. He's Ashutosh. Yeah, I'll get it fast. He started dancing. He said, 10 million births, 10 million births, 10 million births. And they went back and told Mahaprabhu, Mukunda's dancing. He said, I'll finally get to see the Lord after 10 million births. And Mahaprabhu said, okay, bring him in. So this is the view of the devotee. The view of the devotee is, I will undergo whatever is necessary for as long as necessary. Rukmini, she writes this letter to Krishna, please come and kidnap me. And she says, if you don't come and kidnap me, I am willing to do austerities life after life after life until you finally accept me. So this is, of course, practical humility. You know, we have this idea of humility, which means, I'm so fallen. But practical humility is, I'm willing to do whatever it takes, or however long it takes. I'm willing to be patient. Until that, you know, I finally can give up all of my envy and come to real love and total giving in love. And when I come to total giving in love, I will finally get the happiness that gives me satisfaction. And ironically, at that point, I won't care about it anymore. When one finally gets this full happiness that gives one complete satisfaction eternally, that keeps increasing and increasing and increasing, by that point, the person doesn't even care about it anymore. They're so naturally happy and they're so naturally full of satisfaction. They're naturally feeling complete that they've long ago forgotten that I started this journey looking for my own satisfaction. It becomes irrelevant. One's satisfaction is so great and so oceanic and so ananda buddhibardhanam, so expanding that it's not even an item on the table. It's completely out of one's consciousness. One's happiness is just there, dayabak, as one's constitutional position. One no longer becomes a happiness-seeking person. One becomes such a naturally happiness-enjoying person. And the sacrifices that one is making to Krishna out of love are one's happiness. There's no sacrifices at all for Bhagavad Gita 4.24. It all merges into transcendence. So we are very fortunate that Srila Prabhupada has made visible the invisible ink on the menu. We are very fortunate. Srila Prabhupada has made visible. There's happiness in the mode of ignorance, passion, goodness, and then there's real happiness. This is what's available. And this real happiness is available in Vaikuntha, in Ayodhya, in Dwarka, in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada has revealed to us by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu everything that's available to get. And Srila Prabhupada has revealed to us how to get it. So then it just becomes a matter for ourselves. How will I find happiness and where will I go to get it? And remember, this is something we are doing at every moment. I recently heard Srila Prabhupada say, Krishna is giving us the choice 24 hours a day. It's not that we just have certain choice points in our life. But constantly, we are choosing. What am I going to do to become happy? And where am I going to go to get it? So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We have time maybe for one or two questions or comments.